Crack a clue, my name's Chase.
And my name's David.
And welcome to RTR Forward, where we talk about everything and anything Return to Ravnica Forward. But today we've got some pretty cool news. Earlier this week we had a ban announcement release. This is part of their, every 2 month cycle. So we got some bans today, David. What did they ban?
They banned Oko, Thief of Crowns. Isn't that the rest of Oko, Thief of Crowns? Is that right? Yeah. That dumb card. But in addition to Oko, they also banned Once Upon a Time and Veil of Summer. So, a lot of green hate.
Be fair. Green is busted.
Yeah, well, standard it has been. but yes, those were the standard bans. They also made a ban of Renin 6 in Legacy.
Not Modern.
Right. I don't think we're going to discuss that a whole lot because I don't play Legacy.
From what I understand, from what I've gathered from this, is Renin 6 plus Wasteland is pretty overpowered. You don't know what Renin 6 does at home. He is a 2-mana Planeswalker, 1 red and 1 green, starting off with 3 starting loyalty. He's got an uptick for 1/+1, return up to 1 target land from your graveyard to your hand. And so Wasteland is a non-basic land, legal in Legacy and Vintage, where you can tap it, sack it, and destroy a target non-basic land. So you can just get land removal every turn.
As a non-Legacy player, that sounds busted.
It was.
Okay, but then also in Vintage, we got a restriction on Narset. And correct me if I'm wrong, but a restriction is saying you can only have one copy of a card in your 75, right?
Yep, just one copy. And so Narset was banned in Vintage because Narset is busted. And the fact that in the older formats where you have things like Ponder, Preordain, Brainstorm, drawing 0 to 1 cards off of that is absolutely terrible.
I can see that.
I mean, to be fair, Narset has already had her different affairs in Standard and Modern and Legacy as well. But Vintage, she was definitely a powerhouse.
Well, and she's... I think she's on that annoying level in Standard, at least.
Yeah.
She's not impossible to deal with, but she's definitely annoying mostly because bad players like me forget that her static ability is draw one, and then they do something that draws in multiple cards. So...
What's that? I'm opting on my own turn. Yeah, I got a scry one draw card.
Oh.
So, 1-mana scry one. Oh, what is that? It's a land. Oh, draw it next turn. Okay.
Yep. Real bad.
Well, other than that, Pioneer. So, Pioneer's been getting weekly bans ever since the format's conception. And so, on Monday, alongside... but not related to the banned and restricted announcement. They've already made it clear that they're going to keep it different and separate. They actually banned nothing in Pioneer. How do you feel about that?
I personally enjoy that, as I've been playing a decent amount of Pioneer, and I feel like the past bannings have been good. So we've had Belidar Guardians gone, Line of Abundance. Veil of Summer got, or was it Veil?
Yep.
And there's one other card that I'm forgetting.
It was Oath of Nissa.
That's right, yeah. So they dropped that Banhammer hard on 3 and 4 color Saheeli Cat combo.
They also dropped it slightly less hard. Mono Green Devotion has actually still proven to be really good. One big problem is Nykthos, which is still around. But yeah, they kind of gutted green right at the start too.
So do you think they've actively been trying to make green better?
We'll talk about that later.
one other ban that they attempted to get Magic Arena same, but Oko was also banned in Brawl.
He was.
Officially. I don't think we're talking about Brawl a lot today, but that is something that happened as well. Because
good to note.
Literally, you were able to play Oko plus 59 lands and demolish your opponents.
So yes, Oko did get Brandon, Brand.
Brand! Oko, it got branded!
It got branded in Brawl. Oko did get banned in Brawl, officially in paper, as of this announcement. He was banned in Brawl 2 weeks ago? In MTG Arena? Was it 2 weeks ago?
I don't know, because I only get to play Brawl on MTG Arena every Wednesday. Stupid.
Yeah, that, I'm hoping that's something that they change their mind on eventually. Yeah, I really enjoy Brawl.
It would be nice, and Brawl's one of those formats, especially right now, where, at least in our local area, it's not played a lot in paper, but it is nice to play it. It is a fun format, just
yeah,
it's not played a lot in paper around here.
I enjoyed it when it first came out. Played a lot of decks back in Dominaria. Had a, what was it, Liliana Untouched by Death or whatever that card is. The 5-mana Liliana that reanimates. Having a reanimator as a commander is pretty busted.
Are you talking about Amonkhet Lily?
I am.
That's the M19 one, but doesn't matter.
So anyways, alongside these ban announcements, we received quite a big announcement. Not really. I guess it wasn't a big announcement, but it was pretty interesting to see PlayDesign's Lessons Learned article coming out right as soon as a ban happened. Usually this kind of article comes out, you know, roughly 3 to 6 months after a set is released, and typically it's more so spoken by Mark Rosewater. But they sat down and they talked about basically how they handled Standard for the last 3 years, 3-4 years now. And it was honestly pretty interesting. So we're going to kind of walk through that. So basically how they started was saying that Battle for Zendikar, Battle for Zendikar. I wrote Battle of Zendikar.
Yeah, I noticed that earlier, but you know.
But Battle for Zendikar released back in 2015, I think that was, it was fall of 2015, all the way through core set 2019, which was a year ago, that apparently R&D made a conscious effort to gradually power down the format, and we saw that a lot. There were a lot of duds, quite a bit of more duds than usual, especially coming, you know, from Ravnica, Theros, Khan Standard, right into Battle for Zendikar, into Eldritch Moon, and Shadows Over Innistrad.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about just cards in general, Dovin Bond was really bad.
Dovin Bond was Dovin bad. The fact that they had a they turned around and had a -1 for gain 2 life and draw a card, whereas like 3 sets later they have Teferi +1 and untap 2 lands.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Teferi Hero Dominaria costed 1 more and better.
Yeah, that's for certain. And alongside that, they did realize that as they did power down Standard, what they also caused was kind of a rift between some cards being maybe a little out of curve for that low power level. Some examples would be Gideon, Ally of Zendikar, Teferi, Hero of Dominaria, Smuggler's Copter, Aetherworks Marvel, Avacyn, and even Emrakul, the Promised End. Some of these cards stood way above the curve, and because of how low of a power level the format was at the time, you had a lot less to interact with those kind of things, so they really did take over the format.
So yeah, Kaladesh Standard, we got a, I don't think it was an emergency ban, I think it was their regular ban announcement, but Smuggler's Copter got banned pretty quickly.
Emrakul got banned shortly after.
Well, I think those both coincided with each other. I think they were at the same time. I think you're right. See,
because I know Emrakul and Reflector Mage banned. I know Cat got banned by itself.
Yes, Cat was an emergency banning.
Cat was a, oh crap.
Yeah.
How did we miss this? It's one set apart. We were designing these sets at the same time.
Well, the interesting thing about Cat was they let it go. So Saheeli came out in Kaladesh, right? And Felidar Guardian came out in
the next set.
That set after it.
Aether Revolt.
There you go. Thank you. So Felidar Guardian came out in Aether Revolt, and people knew the combo existed, but there wasn't a busted deck put together for it right now, because I remember Aether Revolt Pro Tour, the top eight was like all Mardu vehicles. That's all it was. There was no cat combo. But then a couple weeks afterwards, people started figuring out, because it was, while it turned out to be very good, it took people a while to figure out a good way to get all those colors to come together and work and be busted. So they knew it was busted towards the end of Aether Revolt Standard, and as Amonkhet came out, they hadn't banned it yet, and then, like, I think it was like 3 days after Amonkhet was released on Magic Online, they were like, no, we gotta get rid of this. It's like 75% of the decks right now is literally four color Saheeli.
That out of here. And what we saw is in Pioneer, that same kind of structure of that deck came back, because at the time they did have Oath of Nissa in Standard.
Right. Basically, Pioneer, everybody was like, hey, you remember that deck that was really dumb 2 years ago? Let's recreate it with, you know, a couple of better cards. But once for the most time. Part, yeah, we're going to throw some Teferi, three Teferi.
Time Raveler.
Yep, Time Raveler in here too. And yeah, it was, I think, a very...
And you put Oko in there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, some, yep. But it was a very... had a very big target on its back from the get-go for the Banhammer.
And I think what made this new version of the deck so much better is they didn't actually have to win with the cat combo. They had Oko, they had Teferi, and
right.
They had Saheeli. So they could just grind you out with food and pure card advantage.
Yeah. I played against it multiple times in Pioneer. I never lost a cat combo. I was always able to stop that. I always lost other ways against that deck. So
mostly elks. A lot of elks.
Yeah. 3/3 elks.
So anyways, alongside this admission to the fact that they lowered the power level over the last 4 years, actually it's been 5 years now, 4 to 5 years, they introduced what they called the Fire Philosophy. So the Fire Philosophy stands for fun, inviting, replayable, and exciting. So, David, tell me, has this most recent standard been any of those?
No.
So would you say that they're not living up to their philosophy?
Yeah, because let's put it this way. As somebody who's played Standard very consistently since... Eldritch Moon came out. And I'm saying, when I say consistently, I mean like every Friday night unless I'm out of town or something. Consistently. I haven't played Standard since Throne of Eldraine came out. So that's how much not fun it was.
As someone who often takes breaks during formats because of how OP cards are, I didn't touch Throne of Eldraine. I don't even think I participated in FNM for Throne of Eldraine.
Oh, yeah. I definitely have not yet. It's not over yet. So, you know.
We're in new territory. It's a new standard.
Right.
Everything's brand new and shiny. All these cards that look like crap compared to Oko are now just like gleaming piles of gold.
Yeah, I can, you know, play a 5 or 6 mana creature and then I get turned into a 3/3 elk the next turn, so.
Dang right. So alongside this Fire Philosophy, they kind of mentioned how they began to power up what they considered the marquee sets. These are sets that are starting off in Standard and moving into the Eternal formats alongside that. Basically, they said with Guilds of Ravnica, we're going to start powering it up. And basically what we've seen is there's been a strict power creep over the last year, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, you get cards like Arclight Phoenix, which in itself hasn't been banned in any formats, but it's definitely caused other cards to get banned, a la...
You know, the one mana draw 2, discard 2, Faithless Looting. That card got banned in Modern.
Yeah.
I don't think that was the only reason. I'm pretty sure Hogak was also part of the reason, but...
Yes, but what I will say is it opened up the sore that was Faithless Looting, and a lot of combo decks and stuff like that that weren't that fun to play against.
Yeah. No. And then alongside that, you know, we saw Assassin's Trophy get printed, which is a card.
Well,
not as good as we thought, but still really good.
Right. Everybody thought that that card was broken whenever it got revealed, but it turns out it's actually a pretty fair card because it feels really bad to accelerate your opponent's mana on turn three turn two if you want to get rid of something. I think as far as power level goes on that, that's probably where they're aiming.
Yeah, not that's for sure. I kind of think of Assassin's Trophy as like kind of on the same power level of Path to Exile. You know, you kind of give up the fact that you can't exile a creature, but you can destroy any permanent for basically the same cost of giving your opponent a land. So anyways, the Fire Philosophy was their plan to power up Standard. And apparently, according to this article, they basically want to ramp up Standard to the power level they like it and then kind of let it plateau. And apparently, Throne of Eldraine is the power level that they want Standard to be at.
What I will say is Throne of Eldraine, I mean, as a limited format, was super fun to play. Now, while Sealed and Draft is not the same as Standard, I mean, it's hard to say what this Standard environment's going to be like because they came out and said Oko was a mistake. So, I mean, we will see in the coming weeks and months what Throne of Eldraine should really be like. Because there are cards like the Wicked Wolf that, I mean, that is a really good Magic card. It plays into the food strategy well. It's not ridiculous by itself. I mean, you're not going to have any green deck just say, hey, let's throw in this 4-mana 3/3. It's not completely ridiculous.
No, it's not as broken or as good as it was with Oko, because Oko allowed you to generate a new food every turn. Having the only other standard playable food production be Gilded Goose is definitely going to bring down the power level of this card.
Right. And, I mean, that's not a good or bad thing. I mean, if you want to go a food route there, there's definitely cards that produce food that haven't been played, but they can probably be slotted in place of Oko. So I think there's still going to be a food deck that is somewhere in Standard.
Well, I don't doubt it. I mean, in the article itself, they mentioned how the reason Oko is so strong is because they were trying to build a good curve for a constructed playable food deck.
Well, they built a disgusting curve.
One of the craziest curves we've ever seen. Turn one, Gilded Goose. Turn two, Oko. Actually, hold on. Once upon a time before that. Don't play like I do, all right? Just cast Once Upon a Time first. Don't play your goose first. I've seen many mistakes of that, both in MTG Arena and in paper.
I will say, for how bad I am at Magic, I've never done that.
I've done it a few times. So basically, they said because of their Fire Philosophy, they walked back a few decisions that they kind of made and had cut down on. And those decisions involved returning back to low-cost Planeswalkers. So we've seen a substantial amount of low-cost Planeswalkers. When I say low-cost, I mean 3-mana or less. We haven't seen any 2-mana in Standard other than Renin 6 was in Modern. But I think, based on the stats that I see, there were 21 3-mana Planeswalkers. Now, I'm not saying they were all busted. The large amount of these came from the War of the Spark set. A lot of these were uncommon walkers, two of which actually have seen pretty good play. That's Narset, Part of Veils, and Ashiok.
Yeah, and there's been some corner cases of some of the other ones, but yeah, those are the two that have probably seen the most play at the uncommon level.
Yeah, and just to give you a little bit of a comparison here, there were 21 Planeswalkers. We've had 21 Planeswalkers printed at 3 CMC or less into Standard in the last year, whereas before this new Fire Philosophy initiative, we saw roughly 7, and that was from Battle for Zendikar all the way to M19.
Also, keep in mind, I don't think this affects anything, but we're also not talking about, like, the dual deck planeswalkers, except for the ones, like, we had that Nissa that, Nissa voices Zendikar that wasn't the dual deck or whatever that supplementary
she was
also printed in the regular set as well.
Yeah, she was in O3 Gift Watch.
Right.
But yeah, no, so seven 3-mana planeswalkers printed in that 5-year gap of just basically chalks up to about one per what they considered block at the time, which was just their 2-set philosophy. Starting off with Nissa, Voice of Zendikar. Not a bad card. Saw playing standard. I played it in standard. Black green counters.
I also played it in standard because I also played black green counters.
That's a good deck. I love it. I love it in Pioneer. I'm afraid something's gonna get banned from it though. Like it's good, but now the most recent deck list is starting to jump into like mono green devotions territory. So it's like putting in the 4-mana Vivian and putting in the Hydra, the one that fights.
Yeah, or, Voracious Hydra.
Yeah. So they're starting to increase their curve a little bit because they're realizing that they can get away with all the counter shenanigans with their 1-mana and 2-mana cards.
Yeah, mono green devotion is definitely a very good deck in Pioneer right now.
Mm-hmm. I think it had 2 top 8s in the last Invitational and ended up hitting 2nd place.
Yep, that mono black deck was that was my kind of magic right there.
That was the deck of the tournament. Turn 1, Knight of the Ebon Legion. Turn 2, Smuggler's Compter. Turn 3, I don't care. I'm hitting you with a 3/3 that draws me a card.
Yeah, it was. It was honestly fun to watch too. For what was, I mean, it was definitely an aggro deck, but it had feet in the mid range game
as well. It had feet in the late game. It actually was pretty good against the Bant Field of the Dead decks that were it faced in the top 8.
Bant Field of the Dead. Let's not talk about that.
Let's not talk about that. Let's go back to this article that we're talking about here. So, like I said, 7 planeswalkers printed during that time period. I think a few of them saw play. I know Nissa, Voice of Zendikar saw play. I don't know if Liliana of the Last Hope saw a lot of play in standard.
She didn't see a ton of play. I could tell you I played her because, like I said, I started an Eldritch Moon, and guess who opened her in their pre-release kit? It was me.
I was also there, and I did Pulled Heart Garbage. So you must have gotten all the luck. Seaheely Rai, another card that only saw play in the cat combo. Didn't really see play by herself. Still a pretty decent card. Gideon of the Trials from Amonkhet. That card saw, I played that card.
Yeah, I kicked somebody's butt who played that card once. That'll be a story for another time. But
I definitely played it in the Approach to Second Sun blue-white control decks. Because Gideon's got a nice little plus one there. Stops stuff from dealing damage to you.
That's true.
Nissa, Steward of Elementals, Steward of Elements. She was she's technically a 2-mana walker, but if you play her for 2 mana, she dies, so don't do that. Technically, I we rate her on the scale of a 3-mana walker, because technically you could pay her for 3. Not a bad walker, pretty fun, honestly. I liked her in the ramp decks at the time.
She was a very fun card, not busted or anything in the least amount, but she could definitely do some stuff once she was on the board.
And that brings us to the meme of the week, Jace Cunning Castaway. What was Wizards thinking when they printed this card? This card is just not good.
Hey, it was in the sideboard of a Pro Tour Champion deck.
You're right. I'm sorry. I'm going to go invest in 50 copies.
You should.
You'll see me in 10 years. Anybody want to buy a Jace Cunning Castaway? My investment didn't pay off.
Let me tell you, one of my most disappointing foil mythic pulls ever was that card.
I wanted him to be good. I wanted him to be good so bad. It was a 3-mana Jace. We haven't had one since the original Jace. And he just drew your cards.
Yeah.
And then finally, to round up the 7, we've got Sarkhan the Fireblood. This is from M19. He lets you discard and draw. He lets you add mana for dragons, and he lets you create dragons. He was pretty neat in dragon-centric decks. I don't think he saw really much play outside of any kind of dragon shenanigans.
No, not really. He another one of those, as somebody who dislikes the three-mana planeswalkers for the most part, he was a fair one to play against. I was okay with him.
I honestly, looking back at, you know, the older, what we would consider the lower power level cycle, honestly, I didn't hate playing against any of these. They were honestly very manageable. It's because they didn't
outside
go
outside of Saheeli and Cat.
Okay.
But
yes.
Yes. Saheeli was only that way because of Cat.
Only because of Cat. One thing that these all shared in common, though, is the fact that they didn't go up to stupid amount of loyalty when you play them. They followed the old Planeswalker philosophy as your minus ability should be impactful, but also be something that maybe you shouldn't consider doing the first turn it comes out.
Wait, you mean to tell me that the second ability can be a minus ability?
I am.
Oh. Oko didn't know that.
No. Oko's another story. Oko is what the design team would call a mistake.
Yep.
He broke the laws of Planeswalkers and had a double plus one, or a double plus ability. That were both really good. So that's it for those. We're going to kind of hit the highlights. So these are more, I guess I would say, relevant to Standard in the fact that we've kind of seen some of these see play over the last year. So Dovin, Grand Arbiter, Kaya, Orzhov, Usurper were the two 3-mana walkers from Ravnica Allegiance. Kaya saw play sideboard mainly. She saw play a little bit mainboard for some niche matchups.
I mean, she was great in Esper Control versus Mono Blue. I mean, that's where she was.
Yeah. Dovin, Grand Arbiter, wasn't he in a blue-white aggro deck? Wasn't he in Mono White for a little bit? Didn't they splash him?
Yes, Mono White did splash blue for some time. I don't know if it was for him or not, though.
I knew it was for counters, but maybe it's... all I can remember is they side into Teferi, so...
I think they also used... I think it's Splash Blue, not for Dovin, but... that 3-mana creature that exiles each copy of whatever creature it targets whenever it comes in.
Oh, Deputy Detention.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, that would make sense.
I think that's why it's Splash Blue.
But if my memory serves me, I'm pretty sure Dovin, Grand Arbiter saw play for a little bit.
Did definitely see play.
Tell you a card that didn't see play, Teo the Shield Mage. We're not going to talk about it because it doesn't matter unless you're playing limited. So, kind of stepping into War of the Spark. War of the Spark was a very unique set. It tested a lot of R&D's abilities to have a mass planeswalker war. And they did it, and it was overwhelming. I'll say I enjoy the little sprinkles of planeswalkers that we've received over, you know, the last X amount of years ever since planeswalkers were introduced. But honestly, after the War of the Spark, I kind of got sick of them.
Yeah, I agree. Planeswalkers, for the most part, I mean, they're inherently harder to deal with, right? And, I mean, yeah, we've got a black removal spell and elder spell that can deal with a bunch at a time, but that spell's just dead if you're not playing against a deck with planeswalkers, so it's not like anybody's mainboarding that most of the time.
Yeah, no.
And I think that's the thing is, I don't think outside of like Narset and Teferi are annoying to deal with, but I don't know. I'm of the opinion that they're not stupid broken. They are annoying, and planeswalkers, I guess, should be annoying to deal with, but for the most part, most of the planeswalkers I don't think were bad design inherently.
Teferi. The Time Raveler. they did admit in the... I'll kind of jump to it here. They did have a little confession. So they admitted that maybe some of the 3-mana planeswalkers were a little too strong that they've made over the last year. They did call out Teferi Time Raveler as being a... he shut down instance really well.
Yeah. So, and that's one thing that they also introduced in War of the Spark was the static ability on planeswalkers. That, I think, may have been a mistake for some cards. a la Teferi and Narset. And at the same time, I mean, it's really hard to keep track of all these interactions sometimes, which, I mean, for the people that are pro Magic players, I mean, it may not be hard for them, but for us with very few brain cells, you forget that Tamiyo makes it so they don't discard a card whenever you thought Erasure him, and it feels really bad.
No, that's for sure. I've definitely been shut out by several of these static abilities that I don't really pay attention to, especially the more and more walkers they get on the board. You kind of just like, oh, they got four planeswalkers. Great. You don't really pay attention to how they could hose you in several different ways and mess up your game plan. So I do think static abilities, while unique and interesting, they definitely, I think, especially with planeswalkers, there's only so much design space for their abilities. And that's outside of using, you know, mechanics from the sets that they're within. We've seen that in the past with the original Narset Planeswalker, where she used Rebound, which was a mechanic of the set. But we're seeing that, you know, a little bit less. Oko did make food tokens, which was falling along with that. But without, like, those mechanics, I just feel like there's very limited space for design. So I think static abilities added, like, another level. For that, they're kind of like enchantments. They're enchantment walkers.
They really are. That's a good way to put it. The only one that's not an enchantment walker is old Gideon there, because he only does that on his controller's turn.
You're right. Gideon was a pretty unique design. He has, in my opinion, not been a busted card. He's been a pretty nice tool in, you know, more aggro-based decks. I think he was a good design. I think the fact that he's a 4/4 human soldier with indestructible on your turn is pretty nice. So he can attack and he can buff up somebody else. You get him to 6+ loyalty and he can take out a threat.
Yeah, we've had Gideons in the past. Gideon ally of Zendikar was one that they said was too high on the power scale. He turned into a 5/5, right?
Yep.
He also spit out 2/2s.
Right.
He buffed the board.
He came in with 4 loyalty, went up to 5, usually came along with a 2/2 Alley Knight, usually zeroed him first. If you got a board already, you can immediately ultimate him and give your team an emblem anthem, a +1/+1, which is pretty dirty. But yeah, so Teferi is a big problem. He's one of the more problematic planeswalkers, definitely Oko. As we kind of stepped closer to more recently, we saw some other 3-mana walkers as Sorin, Imperious Bloodlord. He was really good, but he's definitely what I would consider more of a creature-focused or creature-type-focused, so he definitely fit really nicely into a vampire deck, and the vampire deck at the time with Sorin in it was actually really competitive.
Yeah, it was. I got my pants knocked off a couple times by that deck. Champion of Dusk.
Yep. Drop Teferi turn 3. You probably already have, you know, 2 to 3 vampires out.
He meant Sorin when he said Teferi.
Did I say? Oh, sorry. I got Teferi on the mind. You know, ever since Oko's been banned, I looked at some metagame deck lists earlier today, and Teferi is in every single deck. So with Oko being around, it all kind of helped us forget how oppressive Teferi is. And then now that Oko's gone, we're kind of waking back up from this nightmare and realizing that it's the inception and we're in another nightmare. And the nightmare is controlled by Teferi.
Yeah. I don't think they talked about this in the article at all, but I mean, with 3-mana walkers, with walkers in general, it'd be interesting if design space-wise, and I'm not a designer of this game, I don't know the correct answer, but the opposing player never has priority once that planeswalker resolves before your opponent can activate an ability on it. So, I mean, for the most part, that's probably a good thing, but at the same time, unless you're playing counter spells, that planeswalker's coming down and it's doing something.
Oh, no, for sure. I've seen some theories, or not necessarily theories, but some ideas of what if, you know, planeswalkers are affected by summoning sickness and the fact that they can't even activate ability the turn they come out, which is interesting. I don't think that's what I would consider an actual solution. I kind of like the ability of just having that passive priority right after a planeswalker resolves. Definitely less punishing than, you know, playing a walker and having to wait a whole turn to activate it. But I mean, if you think about it, that's what creatures are with activated abilities. You have to wait a turn, so you got to let that creature survive. The one problem being, though, is, you know, planeswalkers can't block. I mean, they can, they just die.
Well, it's person who owns the planeswalker does not get to choose how they block with it.
Yeah. So anyways, with, you know, Thrall of Eldraine coming out, we had quite a few walkers that came out with really high amounts of loyalty. So that's kind of been the new, I would call, quote-unquote, problem of 3-mana walkers, is the fact that Oko can come out, go to 6. Royal Scions can come out, go to 6. And what's ironic is Fry. Sorry, Roast was a card back in Dragons of Tarkir that I used a lot in sideboards to kill creatures with 5 toughness. It was a really nice sideboard red card. But Fry, it's ironic that Fry deals 5 damage, uncounterable, can't be prevented. I believe it can't be prevented to a blue or white creature or planeswalker. Both of the new planeswalkers have blue in them, but you can't Fry them because they go to 6 loyalty.
Hey, you can't Fry Garrick.
You're right, you can't Fry Garrick. You can Aethergust Garrick, though.
That's true.
I think this just adds a new, you know, quality of maybe something they need to look into. And they've definitely admitted that 3-mana planeswalkers are kind of a little too far right now. They're a little too good. And to be fair, this article is not going to take effect for maybe more, you know, 2 years, because R&D works so far ahead. But I'm hoping that, you know, in 2 years we start to see 3-mana walkers that are a little more balanced, maybe are a little more of a, you know, a deterrent. So, you know, you play it on turn 3, maybe you shouldn't down tick it because it's going to die, instead of, oh, I'll play it and then I'll, you know, I'll up tick it because he doesn't have a down ticket and I don't care if he dies. Like, I think we'll definitely see a trend change on that.
Which is probably for the best. And I think that's another thing that underlying, if we're not talking about just straight competitive Magic, when, I don't know, what's a good word for these planeswalkers? They're the cards that sell the sets, right?
They're the money cards.
Yeah, they're the face of the set. I mean, you see Oko and Rowan. Royal Scions, but you see both of them all over the Throne of Eldraine. You probably see Garrick on some stuff too.
You do. Collector's boosters.
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
They sell sets.
Right, right. And they should be inherently powerful. Somebody should be excited when they open them. Like, for example, Jace. You weren't excited when you opened him. 3 mana Jace, let's be specific here. So, I mean, they need to be powerful, they need to be good, but at the same token, I mean, if we're talking more casual Magic, people that are playing Magic on a budget, I mean, people don't want to go out and spend $240 on a playset of Oko, which is not the case anymore. I understand.
You know what? Have you seen recently that ever since Oko's been banned, he's actually shot up $10.
Yeah, that was interesting to me.
Yeah, well, you know why? It's because he's broken in every format. Almost.
Yeah, he's pretty good, as I will tell you. I have played him in Pioneer, and I feel dirty for it.
We got an admission. He admits it. You know what? I have never played Oko on paper. I played him online a lot, but not on paper. Is it a different feeling?
you know, it. I didn't really play Oko online, but I don't know. I don't think it's a different feeling.
No, it's just to me. It's the feeling, the cardboard. It's just the right
exactly.
Weight. You know, but, those tokens are the right weight of a cardboard.
But yeah, Oko's really freaking good. And basically what I'm using him for is a Bant Field of the Dead deck, and he's just like, Yeah, your aggro list, here's, I don't know, 8 extra, 9 extra health you gotta get through because you're gonna try to kill Oko, and then I'm gonna get a food token for it.
Yeah. So, enough about Planeswalkers. I could talk about Planeswalkers all day, as we have so far. Two of the other things that they kind of mentioned alongside what they're bringing back is they're bringing back Color Hate and open-ended combo cards. So, Color Hate, we saw more recently in M20, where we got a cycle of 5 different cards that all hated on the enemy pairs, all of which are somewhat playable. I think I've seen my assortment. I've seen most of them. I've seen one in particular quite a bit, and that's why it's on the ban list. That's Veil of Summer. They admitted that when, you know, they're predicting a meta, especially with working so far in advance and working with the team that they have, they can't, you know, go out and playtest, you know, 10,000 games with different decks like people can on MTG Arena. So Veil of Summer is kind of like their, I guess, safeguard?
Let me tell you. Until you just said it, I forgot Veil of Summer was a Color Hate card. It's just dumb. I mean, yeah, it's still like a sideboard card, but when green's really heavy and it's, or no, it's, what is it, black and blue?
Well, so, when you think of interaction, what colors do you think of?
All the colors. I feel like this is a trick question.
No, the answer is black and blue. Come on, man. Blue's got counters. Black's got kill spells. That's where they're main in.
Yeah, man. Red's got burn spells.
Yeah.
But white's got exile spells.
You can't bolt an Oko, though. You got to bolt him twice.
I mean, I will bolt an Oko once. Watch me do it.
I don't care if he goes down to 3 loyalty. I'll bolt that Oko.
Sometimes you just got to win the war of attrition and
make a statement.
Make a statement.
Yeah, show him who's really boss.
Just bolt him in those perfect 6-pack abs.
So we saw that cycle in M20. We did, even though they said they cut back on the amount of, you know, hate cards, we did see a cycle in M19. That was the, I call it the horse cycle. They were the mares. So one of each color that hated on an enemy, or I think it was an allied color of it. No, it was an enemy color. I hated on an enemy color. They were pretty good. Two of them saw play in standard. One was mainboard, one was side. That was Vine Mare, which is two green for a 4-mana creature. It was a 5/3. I think it just had hexproof.
Yep.
Hexproof in general. And can't be blocked by black creatures. So that saw play a lot in the mono green decks that were rolling around. Slam Llanowar Elf into Steelleaf Champion into Vine Mare into Galta. Slam him down. Hit him in the face.
Let me tell you, when M19 came out, and I played a lot of Grixis and Blue-Black at the time, and when you play a Scarab God, and then they play a Vine Mare and look at you and go, how are you going to block with all those tokens? Feels really bad.
It was a good card, for sure. It definitely wasn't to the same amount of strength as this new hate cycle has been, but they were still pretty playable.
Oh yeah, that, I think all of them to a degree were playable. If we're not talking about just the highest echelon of competitive Magic, I mean, none of them were just straight unplayable.
No, all of them to some degree saw play.
Yeah, I know I brewed some lists with like Plague Mare whenever guilds came out.
Yeah, man, it's a chain wheeler but in black.
Yeah, exactly.
So. Alongside that, so like I said, we haven't seen really any hate cards since, I guess, the M19 cycle in what they would consider the low power level. I don't know what we really should name that section. So we're now in the Fire Philosophy. Before then, we had what I consider, I guess, the low power. What should we call that? The weak sauce? that's our weak sauce format right there. Them 5 years. They were all weak sauce. Came from Theros, mono black devotion. That was lit.
They were weak sauce outside of what many would argue is Kaladesh, which was not weak sauce.
What happened with Kaladesh? I want to understand. So they say that they actively kept standard at such a low power level, but what happened with Kaladesh? That set was busted.
I think it comes down to the energy mechanic, but
I think it does too. And I think I think they wrote like a lessons learned article a few years back, right after, you know, after that set had came out, and they did definitely talked about how energy was what they would consider a parasitic mechanic, because if you go energy, you have to go all in on the energy,
which you could go all in on the
energy. You could attune with Aether, Rogue Refiner, Aetherworks Marvel, Ulamog. Oh, you need a little more energy in between that, but you know, we're not counting.
I may just cast Attune with Aether three more times.
Yeah, exactly. I was, when I got back into, so I took a small little break in between Eldritch Moon and the Kaladesh, and when I came back around Amonkhet, when I saw Attune with Aether, I was like, that's a card? It's a one mana, get any land, any basic land from your deck? I was like, that's so good. And it was. It got banned.
Let me tell you, it made me really sad when it got banned, because I keep talking about less competitive Magic. Well, somebody who was running four color Sunbird's Invocation at the time, I really needed that Attune with Aether and Rogue Refiner.
And they just stripped it away from you.
Yes, it was part of a really broken deck, but I needed it for my jank combos.
I called it, though. When I was one of the first ones at our local store to say that Attune with Aether is going to get banned. It's just too consistent, and anybody I talk to is like, no, it's not going to get banned. There's no way they're going to ban a common. And they did.
Well, and that's one thing. Maybe we can open this up quickly. But let's talk about how broken a card has to be for them to ban it at the Mythic level. They don't want to ban Mythics.
They're the moneymakers.
Exactly.
I mean, we just saw recently they banned Once Upon a Time and Oko, which are the two highest cards in the set. I'm fairly certain Fabled Passage being the other money card of the set. They basically just said, hey, sure, you want to buy Throne of Eldraine? All right, cool. Can't play it in Standard.
Yeah.
Basically what they said.
And I mean, because honestly, back in the copycat Saheeli Rai, Felidar Guardian days, Felidar Guardian was a fun card, but they weren't going to ban Saheeli, the Mythic, when they could ban the Uncommon, because there wasn't, at least in my opinion,
this is your David Minute?
Yes, this is my David Minute. In my humble opinion, Felidar Guardian was a much more fun card to play with, because no one plays with Saheeli outside of Felidar Guardian, and I can tell you, I would play some cat decks with Felidar Guardian.
I mean, I think the one thing that made Felidar Guardian so good is the fact that he can target any permanent. I think he should have maybe targeted... He could have been like a pseudo-restoration angel that blinks another angel. Where he could have just, you know, blinked another creature instead of, you know, allowing you to blink any permanent.
Hey, I'm all for that. Errata him. Make him only blink other cats. Let's do it.
Cat tribal! Let's go on it. Oh man, but open-ended combo cards. So when I read this section of the article, when they said they were kind of reintroducing open-ended combo cards, I was thinking, what do you mean? So back, I was trying to rack my brain, like, what were some combos that they had pre, you know, Battle for Zendikar, when they considered it weak sauce. And the only thing that kind of came to my mind, and I started back in Ravnica Theros. And I remember when cons, you know, came around, that Jeskai Ascendancy was just started to become just a really good combo deck. Saw quite a bit of play in a few different Pro Tours, and that's kind of the only combo deck that I can remember that we had before, you know, we moved into the weak sauce territory. But I think up till recently, we've definitely seen maybe a few more combo enablers. What is it, the Reclamation, Wilderness Reclamation? That's a combo enabler.
Yeah, that's a card that's not a lot of fun to play against.
And it's seen a resurgence. You're seeing Team of Reclamation again in Standard. I love that deck.
You know, I didn't like it with Nexus. I think that was the problem.
Okay. I think Nexus was a busted card. That should have never been printed.
Just make it go to the graveyard. That's all you gotta do.
That's all you gotta do. The fact that it just shuffles back in and it's instant speed is just, it's too good.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to see Nexus of Fate ban in Pioneer eventually. Have you seen the Simic decks running around? The Simic Nexus decks? I'll take that as a yes. Yeah, no, they're nutty. They basically take all the good cards that they already used when the deck was in standard and added a bunch of better cards to it. There's a lot more consistency now. You got Dig Through Time can basically be two mana and find you two Nexus of Fates. It's busted. So I think for sure Nexus of Fate is something that's going to be on the chalk block for that.
I swear, if I run into another deck that runs Nexus of Fate and one copy of Teferi, Hero of Dominaria as their win condition, I'll probably scream.
I remember those days. Oh, man. I wanted to take a little side off here. There's one section of the article. So they do mention that, you know, green was borderline unplayable over the last few years. From what I can think of, Collected Company was really good, but Collected Company came out before the Weak Sauce era. And so that card was very dominant. It never got actually banned, but it gave green a lot of reach in the amount of creatures that it could deploy at instant speed. But up till then, like, Battle for Zendikar didn't really have anything good for green. The only thing I can think of is that green Eldrazi, the mythic Eldrazi creature that I currently cannot think of.
I can see the art in my head.
I can see the art, too.
Is it Worldbreaker?
I think it is Worldbreaker.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Worldbreaker saw a little bit of play. Nissa, Voice of Zendikar, saw a little bit of play. I know there was, like, a few green cards, Traverse the Uvenwald from Shadows over Innistrad. We saw, is it the one that generates clues? I have a card. I literally have that card over there. Yes, Tyrant the Striker. I cannot think of it, and I literally have a playset sitting on my desk. That was
weird
another
flex,
good green card.
Okay.
That was another good green card. Can't really think of some of the Delirium cards are okay, not like stupid good. It was Emrakul that made it good.
I mean, Delirium was good outside of Emrakul. I mean, Ishkanah was still decent. I mean,
Ishkanah was decent, but that deck basically died when Emrakul was banned.
Yeah, I mean, Emrakul was also obviously a really good win con in the deck.
Nutty. I took another break during that time because that was right when you started playing. I don't know what it feels like to have my turn taken by Emrakul in Standard. It's happened to me plenty of times in Commander, but I haven't felt that in Standard, and I feel like it's absolutely backbreaking in Standard.
Very backbreaking. Let me tell you, as somebody who was very new to Magic at the time, I was like, is this a common occurrence?
Yeah, no, that card was absolutely nuts. The fact that you could get it down for, 7-8 mana was absolutely nutty.
Yeah, and then we've got turns where my opponent's controlling my turn, he plays my Gisela, and then he, what's that? Two, it's two black. Is it -4/-4?
Yeah, I know. Grasp of Darkness.
Yep, does that to my Gisela. I mean, it... I played a lot of Aristocrats at the time.
Yeah, she... Emrakul's nutty. And I think what made it even more busted than that is that it had protection from instants. At the time, typically, you don't see a lot of sorcery speed removal. And so,
oh, gotcha.
Yeah,
gotcha.
So even though most of the good removal spells were sorcery speed, people weren't playing them because they just weren't good. So you were seeing Grasp of Darkness. You were seeing... I guess you were seeing Declaration Stone a little bit. But by that point, unless you top deck it, Emrakul's already... They've already cast it out of your hand targeting your own creature.
Yep.
So just an absolutely backbreaking card. So green was basically... They admitted green was pretty much unplayable, so they kind of stepped into kind of white's territory in like hybrid creature removal. And so they've admitted that they're saying we're going to step back, we're going to give it back to white, we're going to find and reevaluate our stance on green. So I'm interested to see, this isn't going to take effect from the next 2 years, so I'm interested to see where green sits in 2 years on that.
I mean, as someone who generally likes green in the color pie, I hope they don't just gut it, because I mean, obviously, the best Magic is when it's a game of rock, paper, scissors, Spock, and whatever else comes from that in whatever that show is.
I'm just gonna let you keep going on that. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, the Big Bang Theory. Okay. But basically, it's rock, paper, scissors, Spock, lizard. I think it's lizard. It's just five way rock, paper, scissors. There's five different things.
So you're equating that to the color pie.
Correct.
So which one is green lizard?
Obviously.
I thought it was scissors.
No, scissors is clearly blue.
Nah, it's paper. I don't know anymore. One last thing I want to talk about before we kind of roll into the, I guess, the ending part of our podcast. We're kind of hitting time here. I found this more funny than anything, but when they're talking about safeguards, we did mention Veil of Summer. They had mentioned that Veil of Summer was a high-level safeguard, so just ended up being way stronger than it was what they had planned for it to be. Absolutely busted card. Really kind of shut blue and black out of the format. At least in the way of control decks. But they did mention Ravager Worm. Do you remember what Ravager Worm does, David?
I can remember the animation that it makes on MTG Arena better than knowing exactly what it does.
To be fair, that animation was pretty awesome. But so Ravager Worm is, I think it's a six. Okay, so it's a six mana. So it's three colorless, red, a green, and a green for six mana creature worm. It's a 4/5 with riot, which allows you to either choose to have it enter the battlefield with a +1/+1 counter or haste. When Ravager Worm enters the battlefield, choose up to one. Ravager Worm fights target creature you don't control, or it destroys target land with an activated ability that isn't a mana ability. So they listed this as a safeguard. This card saw no play.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's six mana, possibly remove a land?
What lands? So I'm thinking this is more of like, did they print this card as a safeguard for Field of the Dead?
Well, it doesn't have an activated ability.
Exactly! That's what I want to know. Because there are, like, maybe they thought, I'm going to assume that the reason that they kind of listed this safeguard is that they thought that the Ixalan lands, you know, the ones that, you know, flipped into busted lands would be more busted than what they were. Really, only, like, two of them actually saw play. I know another one, the Black Green one saw play, Search for His Contest saw play, the Mono White.
Yeah, that was probably the most played, well... Yeah, it was then Search for His Kanta. Yeah.
And then we saw some niche ones, but honestly, they weren't backbreaking.
Hey. I played Gaia's Cradle. Get it.
And I played the red-white one.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, it was an enchantment. It entered the battlefield and pinged all the creatures that didn't have haste. I think it was haste first strike, you other like aggressive abilities. So I was able to play it as like pseudo Chain Whirler. So actually I had a deck, it was red, white, aggro. I played four of those. I played four Chain Whirlers. I played like other cards that had, you know, I think it was like haste, prowess, first strike, and something else. I played just a lot of creatures that were resilient to that effect. So I basically played it as eight Chain Whirlers. It was an eight Chain Whirler deck, and it was busted.
Is that similar to 8-Rack in Modern?
Sure. Same concept. You kill the opponent. Doesn't matter how you do it. But I just thought that was an interesting include. So we're at time for the day. Appreciate you guys for joining in on us as we kind of dive right through the ban and restricted announcement and then the play design lessons learned section. So any final comments as we get out of here, David?
I'm fresh out.
We spent our whole time just dissing on Planeswalkers and Imrakul that we kind of forgot about everything else. Well, appreciate you guys for listening in. We'll see you guys soon.
Peace out.
Peace.